that I was taking on such a fast growth deal that I knew that I had to touch them with my humanness and touch them with my soul. So one of the things I did is every 3 months I would have what I called a You Ask For It session. And all I'd do is I'd come out in a bar stool for an hour and a half, and there would be 700 people come out. And they could ask me any question they wanted to ask me. I mean, I would just sit on the bar stool and say, look, you can ask me any question you want to ask me, and I'll give you an answer. Now, it may be not a good answer, and they would ask me things about my personal life, they'd ask me things about the family, they'd ask me why I made certain decisions, and I would just sit there on the bar stool and just very calmly answer all their questions. Do you realize how disarming that is? Do you realize in the process of change, one of the things that happens in the process of change is people that are against change, they try to undermine it. But you can't undermine it if the guy's sitting on a bar stool saying, ask any question you want to ask. One of the reasons that rumor and gossip and all the envy and all the stuff that happens in a company or a business, one of the reasons it all happens is because there's not a true channel to get to the source to find out the questions that a person's really asking. So when I say over-communicate, that's one of the greatest ways to handle resistance, is just become very open, become very vulnerable, and say, hey, ask me anything, I'll give you the answer on it. And immediately that takes away the mystery, that takes away the mystique, that takes away they're trying to hide something, they know something I don't know, and good night if I knew what they knew, and ooh, and here we go. Number nine, wear your commitment on your sleeve. Wear your commitment on your sleeve. Now, let's do this paragraph, because this is an important paragraph. A lot of resistance dies out once people come to the conclusion that change is a done deal. If they can tell that you're just not testing the water, that you're truly not going to go back, opposition quickly tapers off. People will test the limits looking to find out if you're really serious about what you're trying to accomplish. In other words, wear your commitment on your sleeve to people know that you're not turning back. Number 10, develop a reward system to support change. Reward the people that are helping you make the change itself. Number 11, get resistance out in the open. Make it easy and safe for people to open up. Number 12, make sure your people have the training that is needed. Make sure that you've been heavy on the front end explaining the transitions for them. And number 13, turn the page. Number 13, get started. But by the way, I love this next couple statements I have under the get started. Resistors rely on a strategy of delay. Naturally, speed is the adversary they fear the most. They hate fast. In fact, actually, the resistors don't even want slow. They want not at all. Isn't that cute? Okay. So if you're going to overcome other issues, you got to handle regret in your life, you got to handle resentment, you got to handle resistance of others, and then you got to handle rejection. What do you deal with? How do you deal with rejection? Snoopy said, it doesn't make any difference whether you win or lose until you lose. I think I read the ultimate recently of rejection. Let me read it to you. Dr. Robert Stackel tells about a judge in Yugoslavia that had a shocking experience, literally. He was standing in the bathtub and reached up to turn on the light. He received a tremendous jolt of electricity and fell out of the tub. His wife called the doctor. He pronounced him dead. And in accordance with the government health regulation, his body was placed in a vault beneath the cemetery chapel. Some hours later, in an open casket, the judge regained consciousness. At first, he had no idea where he was or what had happened. He climbed out of the casket to find the vault door closed. He shook the door and cried for help. The guard was terrified and fled. Finally, the guard got some help and came back and opened the door. The judge phoned his wife and told her that he was coming home. She shrieked and hung up the phone and fainted. Next, he tried going to several homes of his neighbors, and they took one look at him standing outside the front door and slammed the door in his face, thinking that he was a ghost. Last he found a friend that had not heard that he was dead, whom he convinced that he was really alive, who acted as a go-between, and gradually the man was able to convince friends and family that he was really alive. That's major rejection, don't you think, huh? When I think I've been rejected, I just think of that judge in Yugoslavia and say, hey, I ain't seen nothing yet. Dustin Hoffman, the actor, said, it's in your notes, if anyone had told us that we would have been successful, we would have laughed in their face. We were anything but successful actors in those days. I was a waiter. Gene Hackman was a mover, and Robert Duvall worked at a post office. We didn't dream of being rich and famous. We dreamed of finding a job. It was a time of terrible rejection, and we hated being rejected. It got to the point that we used to leave our 8x10s at the door of casting agents, knock and run, just so we wouldn't have to be rejected face to face again. It was so discouraging that I seriously considered quitting and becoming an acting teacher at a university. Now, all I'm saying is, do we not all face this? So, how do you respond to rejection? Number one, understand the dynamics of rejection. And the dynamics basically are this simple. You should feel bad when you're rejected. You know, I hear these people say, well, you know, don't let it worry you when you're rejected. Can I tell you something? That's not natural. There's not a person in this room that likes to be rejected. If you like to be rejected, you have other issues we need to deal with. And I've got a therapist for you. You know what I'm saying? Because, it doesn't bother me. I don't care what people think. You are a liar. You're not in touch with who you are. You haven't had a realistic day with your feelings. So the dynamics of rejection is a couple things going on. One is you will get rejected in life. And number two is you will not feel good. If you feel good, then we've got to talk about other issues. Don't worry about that. Number two, share your feelings with someone. What I have found is that what's necessary when rejected is you have to have a place to vent. Now, in marriage, I didn't know this in the early years, I thought when Margaret was venting, she wanted answers. I'm just a stupid man. So she would vent about this or that, and I would sit there and I'd just calmly say, well, honey, we can fix that. That's no problem at all if we just do this and this and this. And she'd say, I don't want answers. Just let me steam. Let me holler. Let me yell here. So I learned to not give answers. I learned to say, you're right about, yes. Ticks me off. Yeah, oh, yes. Well, let's have another cup of coffee. Oh, yes, oh. Now, I'll tell you what, I haven't solved a problem, but I have solved a problem. Yes. No, you've got to have somebody to vent to. When I went to Skyline, or when Jim, who followed me, went to Skyline, Jim Gardo, I knew that he was going to take a lot of heat. Now, the reason I knew he was going to take a lot of heat is because I'd been there for 14 years, I'd been fairly successful, and I knew him following me, they were going to do the comparison game. Now, let me relate. I followed the founding pastor who had been in the church 27 years. So when I came, oh man, all I heard was about the previous pastor and how good he was. And oh, it's just, they just talked about, I mean, he was a great musician. On Mother's Day, he'd sit at the piano and just play and sing songs about Mother. Put a grandma on the rocking chair and she'd just rock. He'd sing songs and everybody'd cry and feel good. I remember my first Mother's Day, of course, you know, all I do is do chopsticks on the piano. And when I'm done, people are shaking my hands all the way out and say, boy, we sure missed Pastor Butcher today, you know. And I'm sitting there and saying, boy, I missed him myself, you know what I mean? I wish the guy had been. Now, when Jim came there, I sat down with Jim one day. I had him over to the house, and he and his wife, Carol, and I said, I want to talk to you. And one of the things I want to talk to you about is you're going to get compared with me. So I want to tell you all the stupid things I did. So when somebody compares you with me, you can just think about all the dumb things I did and say, well, I thank God I'm not that bad. And I took him through an hour of all the stupid things I'd done in that church. By the time I was done, we were laughing. We were rolling on the floor. We were just cracking up. And he was truly looking at me and said, "You are really, you did some stupid things, didn't you?" He said, "You're one of the dumbest guys I've ever met." And I said, I agree. And Margaret's saying, "Yeah, that's very true. It's very true." For over 28 years, I said, he just does dumb things. I mean, it's a gift with me. Now, all I'm saying is, do you know how much that helped him? Do you know how that freed him up? Because all I want to do is, because he's got to do this long haul, baby. He's got all kind of stuff. And all I want to do is help him understand and have him somebody to talk to, somebody that's safe, somebody to laugh with, somebody that just allowed him to understand that he's going to make some mistakes. The third area in handling rejection is to look at the person who rejected you. And the reason I say that is I learned a long time ago that hurting people hurt people. So when somebody rejects me or somebody is unkind to me, my first question is not why. My first question is I want to look at them and see if they're hurting people. And if they're hurting people, I realize that many times I just happen to be the person that was around them when their hurt showed up, and so therefore I got the grenade. Okay? Number four, look at yourself. And the reason you want to look at yourself is I feel like D.L. Moody, I've had more trouble, who said about himself, D.L. Moody said, "I've had more trouble with D.L. Moody than any other person alive." Well, you know, I found the enemy and it's me. We have to look and say, am I doing things that cause people to reject me? Number five, do what is right. Just do what is right. Successful people do what unsuccessful people won't do. I gave this to Jim Dornan one day, the paradoxical commandments of leadership. And he told me later, he said, "John, it's one of the most favorite things I've ever had or read or whatever." He says, "People are illogical, unreasonable, and self-centered. Love them anyway. If you do good, people will accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Do good anyway. If you're successful, you'll win false friends and true enemies. Succeed anyway. The good you do today will be forgotten tomorrow. Do good anyway. Honesty and frankness make you vulnerable, but be honest and frank anyway. The biggest men with the biggest ideas can be shot down by the smallest men with the smallest minds. Think big anyway. People favor underdogs, but follow only top dogs. Fight for a few underdogs anyway. What you spend years building may be destroyed overnight. Build anyway. People really need help, but may attack you if you help them. Help them anyway. Give the world the best that you have, and you'll get kicked in the teeth. Give the world the best you have anyway." Let me close with one of my favorite overcoming stories. Every one of us in this room have appreciated the book written by Norman Vincent Peale, The Power of Positive Thinking. I'm going to assume that you've all read it. If you haven't, you need to read it. It's a classic. It's sold over 30 million copies. That in itself tells you you probably ought to read it. You know, there are just some great books, classic books, like The Power of Positive Thinking, The Magic of Believing by David Schwartz, The How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. I mean, there are just some classic books you need to have under your belt. Well, it's a great story of Norman, as far as Norman Vincent Peale is concerned. When he wrote the book, he wrote this book in his 50s, The Power of Positive Thinking. He wrote the manuscript. And he took it to over 30 publishers, of which none of them would publish the book. And one day he came home so discouraged, he took the manuscript and he just threw it in the waste paper basket, the whole manuscript. And his wife Ruth came in and saw what he had done and knew how hard he had worked and all of his dreams and everything. And she reached out instinctively to grab it out of the waste paper basket to give it back and say, "Norman, you can't throw this away." And he looked at her very sternly and said, "Don't touch that manuscript." In fact, he said, "I forbid you to take it out of that waste paper basket." He said, "I've gone through enough rejections. It's obviously not a good manuscript. It isn't going to be a good book. It's obvious that my dreams were not what they should be." So he said, "Leave it in the waste basket. That's where it belongs." Well, she was greatly troubled because she thought it was a fabulous manuscript and thought it had great potential. So the next day when he left for his office, realizing that he had forbid her to take the manuscript out of the waste paper basket, she picked up the waste paper basket. She wrapped it up and she carried it herself to a publisher. Sat down with him and said, "This is my husband's manuscript," which he had never seen a manuscript come in this form before. Unwrapped it, saw the waste paper basket. He pulled it out, read it, loved it, published it. And now you know the rest of the story. I wonder how many times in life I've thrown one of my dreams in a waste basket. I wonder how many times I've said, "Well, hey, look, I tell you what, it's not seemingly working out," and so I trash today what has potential of being a treasure tomorrow. I just want to encourage you as I close this lesson. You may not today be where you want to be on your journey. You may look ahead and say, "Whoa, it's going to be a high uphill climb." But I just want you to know this. The only people that ever finish the race are the people that keep on keeping on. The only people that ever hear the "Well done, thou good and faithful servant," are the ones who decide to run one more mile. The world is handed to people not because of their brilliance, not because of their expertise, but because of their persistence and tenacity and their ability and their willingness to discipline themselves, focus on tomorrow, and take one more step today. That's what I wish for you. God bless.